A little bit of context. Also, I speak too fast, so I purposely will tell myself to slow down. And I've put it down here because my head is in so many places. It helped me to remember where I am and what I'm doing at this very moment in time. First of all, it's very nice to be back in Leeds, and as somebody who was in Northern School in '97, and spent my whole existence in Chapel Town for 3 years. Leeds has become quite a beautiful place, actually.
Mm.
I'm quite stunned when I was walking across how great it is. So it's really nice to be back. And upon leaving Northern School, I moved to North East. My wife's from the North East, and in 1999 we started Tin Arts. And the driving goal behind why we started Tin Arts was because I had a fantastic time in Northern School. And then we went back to the North East and realised that we were very fortunate position, and many, many people would never get a chance to do what I did. So we decided that all our work would be about access and participation and giving people a taste of what we you know, discovered. But with the kind of professionalism and quality that we would challenge people and we would strive for kind of excellence, if you like. And 13 years later, Tin Arts still goes on. Myself and my wife run it. And it is, our participation has focused in the last few years a lot on vulnerable people and people with disabilities. We work a lot with Karen Bowditch in the North East as well, actually. So that kind of informs a lot of my opinions. We don't produce work necessarily. It can be a small part of what we do, but we offer that opportunity to engage. Obviously, I have to do the health and safety warning that to provoke and say anything represents a personal opinion and not Tin Arts, and doesn't represent the Arts Council's opinions or anything of the sort, because I want to keep my MPO status when we get in.
And I should just interrupt there by saying that Dave and I have asked the speakers to be provocative, to provoke discussion, rather than just give us a lecture that might can't delve. So I think that's a good caveat, and obviously we are documenting this. So
yeah.
If you say anything that you'd rather wasn't documented, then please tell Stephen.
Same goes for the whole night.
No, it's okay. I mean, I could have gone on for hours, and I have self-edited already, actually. It literally takes 8, 7, 8, 9
mm-hmm.
minutes or so. I thought about where to start from, and I thought, well, I could just start from the kind of easy question of does dance matter, and just go, there you go, let's get on with that. But I didn't think that was going to do much good. But I am interested in how dance matters. And whether real impact happens and where real impact happens. So in the theatre, in the studio, or on the street corner, how we genuinely place dance in our own and other people's lives, and why we place it there and what we hope to achieve by placing it there. The kind of starting question might be why I choose to concentrate on participation and why I don't create and distribute work. And primarily it's because that's my place. That's my where I make connections with people. That's my skill set, if you like. And that's where I enjoy the interaction, the kind of human-to-human place. And that's where I find the best flow of ideas myself. To be honest, also, that's the simplest life for me. It achieves a work-life balance for me. It allows me to do this. And then allows me to go off and do my running and biking and stuff I like to do with family and friends and things like that. On a kind of global level, if dance is a form of entertainment, if we take it as a kind of, that could be part of it, and if entertaining is what the public purse is kind of paying for us to do, then TV programmes like Strictly Come Dancing, So You Think You Can Dance, might just be enough. Having dance at the opening and closing ceremonies and putting it there might fulfil the society's need for dance, and that might be it. That's all they want from us. However, if that kind of holds true, that maybe TV and closing and opening ceremonies is the populist based level, for me it doesn't touch on the truly creative, expressive, nurturing side of dance, the bit that we often maybe struggle to advocate or explain. Or I still can't tell you what contemporary dance is in one sentence, and I don't think I ever be able to will, and maybe that's a great thing. And for this, to kind of the nurturing creative side, we need dance makers. And there will always be good dance makers who form transient self-penned companies that have their time and then they move through and disappear. Charlotte and Wayne McGregor and Hofesh and Yasmin and Karen Bowditch all form entities, and these entities make work, and then they will stop and new ones will emerge and they will take their place, and then they will repeat the process of those who went before them. And if that cycle just keeps getting repeated, then I don't understand what difference that makes. What would be the point of that existence? And if that, and can that transience become permanent, and should it become permanent? in the way that, for example, Northern Ballet, Rambe, English National Ballet have a sense of permanence about them. Well, the leadership changes, but the companies exist. And in most of the cases, the leadership changes, so the companies don't exist anymore. An argument that could be made is that companies like Charlotte Vincent Way McGregor is born out of and formed from individual recklessness. And that individual recklessness, the notion that having a level of independence, not to be accountable to others, that allows that space to create, to follow the heart, to act on instinct, to include passion, nuance, personal taste, make decisions, turn about, change those decisions, switch directions you please, enter into and move straight away from collaboration swiftly, and bring back your old self change. Albeit those decisions made in isolation might have no consideration for others, might rarely invite others to inform that change, perpetuate this transient cycle. But the opportunity to be individually reckless is a great gift we enjoy, actually. To be fickle, if you like. It supports being that exception to the rule, invites the new, and it may have no benefit for the greater good at all, but it does, or it could matter. If you work on the premise that the North, our own area, is the land of opportunity because of the current vacuous landscape of then time and space to grow and develop new ideas, you'd expect individual recklessness to manifest itself in something or someone out there pushing something that excites, challenges, stimulates, inspires, and opens new worlds and doors, new territory never been seen or experienced before, a fresh approach free from conventional form. Maybe I'm missing something, and particularly in the Northeast it is a little bit isolated. But at the moment, I don't see it and I don't feel it anywhere, actually. I don't see what's going to rock up and kind of shake my world about. It's all very nice. It's all very comfortable. It's all very smiley. And what is to one person simple and engaging and moving and life-changing, to the next person is dull and predictable and formulaic and just pretending. And that kind of one of the battles we have ourselves is that subjectiveness about the whole thing. I don't think we'll ever agree on shared aesthetic, because it's based on our and my personal taste. It wouldn't be my personal taste if I could actually find that commonality of aesthetic. But in the Northern area, is it about work that has narrative, work that tackles issues, work that has a movement style, or captures this Northern spirit? To be honest, I have no idea what Northern spirit or aesthetic is. And interestingly, if you look across Northeast, most people in places of influence and leadership aren't even from the Northeast. I'm a member of the Cultural Partnership in County Durham, and there's not one person from Durham sits on the Cultural Partnership. We none of us were born and bred there. Durham's heritage and culture, it sells itself on practical intelligence. And if I was to try and transpose practical intelligence into dance, I have no idea where I'd start or begin to kind of represent our culture. And then there's the bubble, because outside of the bubble, I believe there's a perception that the rest of the world thinks that we are one big, united, happy family. That sits within dance. And as a glass half full person, very optimistic always, I'd like to believe it, but I don't believe it at all. I don't believe it, and I'm actually yet to hear a coherent argument about why we should be a big, united, happy family. Indeed, actually, that whole concept might quash the individual recklessness that brings about the ideas that might change something. That said, a big, united family, for a whole host of reasons, some personal, some professional, could work, but we'd have to start sitting with all the elephants in the room, like honesty and transparency and the end of competition and the stop to moaning, a willingness not to be so bloody defensive and to invite criticism, to accept criticism and allow space to be reckless. I don't think reckless is the same as failure, by the way. I think recklessness is just testing and challenging and trying things. But also you'd have to be accountable with that and have a good hard stare at what we're doing. Ultimately, we kind of want the moon on a stick. To find a way of helping the moon and stick exist. Several months ago, I got caught speeding. And so yesterday I was at a speed awareness course. which really is...
And learn the points is what it is.
Yeah, exactly. my mind did drift occasionally. But right in the middle of it, there was this acronym. And the guy, it was an acronym of... I don't know, has anyone else done a speed awareness course?
Did
they do the acronym of COAST?
Oh, I don't think so, no.
Okay, there's this acronym COAST, and it's COAST. And to introduce the acronym, the facilitator.
It's only the men that have
to speak. The facilitator introduced the definition that a crash could be defined as two objects sharing the same time and space. That's what a crash is. A car, cars flow around, pass by, next to each other, constantly, and those of us who drive, you enter into a contractual agreement based on a collective understanding on the principles of the road network and a kind of personal responsibility within that framework. When it works well, we even help other cars. We indicate where we're going, we give intention, we're as transparent as we can to actually make this whole thing work. The ultimate, obviously, purpose of that is to get to our destination. It's a selfish goal, but we collaborate with others to reach that goal. And when we don't achieve that goal, then we crash. We kind of hit the same time and space. So the COAST acronym, the hilarious thing about it was, I tried to record to my wife last night, and I couldn't remember what the C stood for. And the C stood for concentration. But it's concentration, observation, awareness, space, and time. And if you adopt the first three, if you concentrate, you observe, and you're aware, then you create space and time. You make yourself have a kind of safer journey, if you like. If you tweak that in a really kind of crowbar way and change the C into collaboration, then by collaborating, observing, and the growing awareness of our collective direction and individual responsibilities, guided by principles, guided by boundaries, we could create and allow the time and space to move forwards. I'm obviously not suggesting that COAST becomes a mantra we pick up and put right there, but it's a kind of, it represents a tangible something around which we can gather, focus, and draw opinion. It's not a request for us all to move in the same speed, head in the same direction, take the same path, or even adopt the same vehicle, but it is about how we recognise that we together, or whether we want to be, are part of a collective, whether that's an external pressure to be a collective, or whether we choose to opt into that collective. So a collective that hosts, supports, and thrives upon individual recklessness. A collective born of transience. A collective with an internal perception that may be different and may contrast to its external perception. Currently a collective that may lack in discourse and be strong in defensiveness. A collective that can disappoint as quickly and as equally as it can delight. A collective that could be ours if we want it to be and make sense to us in the hope that we can then show its worth and how it matters to others. Before I put my last point, it's a point I fed into. I was at Northern Ballet with Selena this afternoon, who's a good friend from years ago, and we were talking about young people participating in our practice and about the monetization of what we do. How can we make money out of what we do? If banks can take public sector funding and shove it in and return a profit and give the money back, why can't we do it? Well, you're not allowed to do it because you're not allowed to apply for money if you're going to say you're going to make profit on money. And then we decided that actually if we wanted to make money out of dance, we'd basically start a private dance school because we'd widen our demographic. We'd work with a completely different set of young people from different working classes. Young people would be demand, you know, they'd show their money by coming on demand, and we could offer progression and accreditation through the pathways into employment and future life. So I was kind of interested in that, where we were with that. So to finish, this is the simple question. How can we collaborate if we want to? What do we need to observe, or where do we observe it? What could we be more aware of toward ourselves, individually, collectively, the time and the space to explore, examine, and ultimately show how dance matters?
Thank you very much. Thank you for that provocation, those thoughts.